Hi, I'm Javon Bolden. I am an African-American Christian woman, founder and CEO of Embolden Media Group. This is The Cultural Christ.
Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, J.W. Buck. In this podcast, we explore the intersection between the Christian faith and cultural identity. We hold interviews with followers of Jesus to discuss the way our faith impacts our culture and how our cultural identity impacts faith. Now to this week's episode. Welcome, everyone. I am thrilled to have Javon Bolden on the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Josh. Great to be with you today.
Yeah, thanks for being on. So where are you right now? If for those that are listening, there's a little dog in the background and you have a beautiful living room. So where are you at?
So I'm actually in Florida geographically. I'm in Central Florida and near the Orlando area. And in my house, I'm actually in my library study / family room / dog room. So there's all kinds of things that could happen behind me. And I think it might, you know, provide some great entertainment for people who may see this video.
That's awesome. So tell us about your cultural background, your upbringing.
Yeah, so that's always an interesting question for me because I kind of felt like I didn't have a culture. I know that sounds weird, but I wasn't quite sure of me as a cultural person. I'm identified, I guess I even self-identify as African-American, and I grew up in an African-American community, or I should say a Black community, because I grew around diverse Black people. My parents were married, as far as I understand it, when they both came to Christ. And so I was probably like 4. And there was this whole thing where my mom had this dream about my dad becoming a pastor. I was born in New London, Connecticut. And, you know, so they came to Christ there, and they came to Christ through the Seventh-day Adventist church denomination. And so she had this dream that he was supposed to be this pastor. So, you know, they started to try to figure out what that would look like. And we ended up moving to Huntsville, Alabama, which is the home of Oakwood College then, but now Oakwood University, where he would pursue this dream that she had. So Oakwood University is one of the historically Black colleges and universities in the area. There are two in that area, actually. Alabama A&M is the other university there. So, you know, I grew up in sort of like this smaller subculture in the South, an oasis, I call it, of Black culture. And even going to school, so all kinds of people came to this university to pursue various degrees. And because it was a Black Seventh-day Adventist school, Black Seventh-day Adventists pretty much came there. And of course, there were people of other faiths that went, but predominantly it was Seventh-day Adventists. Yeah. So, I mean, growing up in this experience, I wasn't quite sure. I wasn't faced with cultural questions, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Except when I did notice people from other who weren't African-American, I could sense there was a difference in how they did things. But I also felt very at home there.
Interesting. So you moved from Connecticut to Alabama. Your dad is getting into ministry, if I understand that, because your mom had a dream. Do you have any siblings at the time?
Yes. So my younger brother, Jason, he is 2.5 years younger than me.
All right. So you're the older sister.
Oldest. Mm-hmm. Yep. Just the two of us.
and you drew a distinction between African-American culture and Black culture. Talk to me a little bit about that in Alabama, where you were at.
That's interesting. So like I said, I was kind of in this oasis and maybe sort of like a cocoon. So I really wasn't contrasting my Black cultural experience necessarily with being in the South.
Wow.
There were certain times I did not have to encounter that until we were interacting outside of that. And maybe as I got older and my dad's educational and career pursuits sort of took us outside of that space. So we were sort of protected for a while, but being an African-American in that environment, there was some interesting tension there. There are some beliefs about African-Americans within the larger Black community that are a little bit disparaging, and coming in contact with those sometimes felt hurtful, to be honest with you, hurtful. But it was also within the setting of this higher education community. So when I say I was a part of this community within, like I said, the community, I'm repeating my words here, but there was a preschool type experience. There's a elementary school and there's an academy. Then there's the university or college. So you could, you know, potentially spend your whole educational experience. Plus there was a church that was on the campus that you could go. So honestly, you didn't really have to go far.
Yeah.
You could have all of your various needs met. And so yeah, I mean, I went to private school that's, you know, there for most of my 12 K through 12 years, and even went to college for the first 2 years there. So there wasn't really a whole lot of, except like I said, when we stepped out, what happens with pastors in this community is that they are sometimes given, I guess, work experience opportunities. So they can work at churches, local churches in the area. And there was a set of churches that my dad had the opportunity to minister to and serve as part of his growing his experience as a pastor and all of that before he became a pastor. So when we would attend these churches, they were in Tennessee, in the very, very rural areas of Tennessee, Black churches as well. However, we had to travel from Huntsville. This is in the early 80s.
Okay.
Travel from Huntsville to maybe 30, 45 minutes away. Sometimes I think one church was 55 minutes away. I remember all these details. And we would encounter some really scary things. There were still signs up that said things like no Blacks or Negroes after dark, or no coloreds. Some of these language was still used then.
Yeah.
And this is stuff we're seeing. And there was one, another situation where one of the churches was in Pulaski, Tennessee. And I think I understand that Pulaski is one of the founding cities of the Ku Klux Klan. And so one Saturday, so Seventh-day Adventists go to church on Saturday, they were having a rally in the center of town. Mm. And so word came to our church that we needed to get out of town, get back to Huntsville as quickly as possible. Things were going to escalate, and we needed to be on our way. And I remember seeing the Grand Wizards and the different ones with their hoods and their hats and their all of this dressed up in the center of town, big fire trucks and different things kind of around as they were getting ready to parade through town. It was the most terrifying experience of my life, one of them. And I remember my parents telling us, just get down in the back. You know, they're trying to hurry up and get out. They're frightened and they're not set up to do anything to anyone at that point. It's broad daylight. So those are some of the things we encountered. Another thing I remember being afraid of on these roads, of course, we're serving churches on Wednesday night prayer meetings and different things like that. Encountering like sheriffs and police at night. And just there was just this fear of not wanting to be caught as a Black person in certain circumstances. So those are the experiences I experienced outside of the Cthulhu.
Wow. So if I'm understanding it correctly, it was a very strong Christian subculture, the Seventh-day Adventist subculture, that allowed there to be a bubble and a protection. But as your father and as your family ventured out into teaching and preaching in different churches, you're encountering the broader culture set against African-Americans and Black people and all those different places of the South. And that's unbelievably jarring, it sounds like. Growing up in such a strong subculture, and we all grow up in strong culture, right? It's like a funny thing to say, but you're mentioning cocoon, bubble. Looking back on that, do you see that as a really incredible part of your upbringing? Because it's not always like that. It's just not.
I didn't know. I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember my friends, we would be going through school and complaining about stuff and, oh, why do we have to learn this? And, you know, the teachers aren't this and the teacher. Man, we had some of the most outstanding professors, the outstanding teachers who knew our history, who knew our accomplishments, who knew our overcoming as a people, who lived our growing up experiences and knew how to relate to us culture to culture.
Yeah.
And since, you know, graduating from college and moving into my career, oh my gosh, I did not realize the gift that that experience was. And of course, no circumstance is perfect, but I feel very blessed to have been raised in an environment like that, for sure.
What was it like leaving your first 2 years of college or after your college experience and interacting with broader either Southern culture or American culture in general? Of course, you had tons of exposure, but kind of coming out of that bubble, what was that like for you culturally? You know, either as a woman or African-American woman, entering the workforce, that's another part of culture is, for those that don't know, you're a writer, editor, a publisher, you've done so many things, right? What was that like kind of entering that next phase of your life culturally?
As I think back, I love this. I love these questions because I don't really often think about myself, I think, in these terms. You mentioned that I work as a editor and writer and publisher. And, you know, that's something that I moved into as a result of great soul searching. But I may think like this on behalf of other people, you know, how do we make sure that you're, you know, taken care of, that your voice is heard, that you're able to create as authentically and fully as you need to, all of these things. So yeah, this is interesting to be reflective in this way. I almost want to say that as I was leaving Oakwood University, going to a public college is where I went. I went to University of Alabama, Roll Tide. It was at the time, if I'm looking back at myself as a 20-ish year old, when I was 20, when I decided to leave, maybe 19 or 20, I'm a little arrogant, you know, not really realizing all that I had been afforded, you know, to me in that environment. But I was so ready to go. I was so ready to go. I was like, oh, I cannot wait to get out of this cocoon of expectation. People, you know, there's when you're in an environment like that, first of all, like I said, it's a higher education environment. Black excellence is a thing. There's expectations for your life. There's sort of a little bit of pressure, maybe not a little, a lot of pressure about representing your culture well, being able to go out and do well on behalf of the culture, being able to reach back into the culture to support and raise up others. You know, there's a lot there. And it's not always put in the terms of a mission. It's sort of like, it feels like pressure. So I was excited to leave. And upon leaving, it felt at first very liberating. I didn't feel squished down or anything like that. I felt like I had room to be whoever I wanted to be in that new environment. I could set my own expectations. I could reinvent myself if I wanted to. I was at the time, I'm now an agent and publisher and editor. At the time, I was Javon, the aspiring neurosurgeon. So
yeah.
That's a bit of a difference. And upon changing environments, I was like, I'm releasing all of that pressure and I'm going to go after what I love. As you talk to more African-Americans or people from the diaspora, you might hear things like, we don't go after the things we love like that. You could do that on the side if you want to while you're pursuing and making money. And so, you know, anyway, so I didn't have that pressure. So it was great. The professors that I have had were outstanding. And it was just different. And I think I embrace as a person, this is not culturally, as an individual, I embrace change and I like new things. Yeah. So it was exciting for me.
Let's switch gears to talk about Jesus. A question I've been asking everybody is growing up, and this will be interesting from within a Seventh-day frame, growing up, what was your mental image of Jesus? Were there felt boards of Jesus? Were there pictures of him? Did it matter to you? And I guess what has been your journey in terms of understanding who Jesus is culturally and who you understood him to be?
I saw all the felts. My parents were, instead of Sunday school, there was Sabbath school.
Yeah.
My parents were active in the church, so they were Sabbath school teachers.
So cool.
So there were the lesson plans that they brought home and, you know, all the stuff. We got to play with all of the stuff. I remember that we used to go to Lifeway bookstore, I think it was, and we would get our, you know, my parents would get some of their supplies and some of their lessons from there, from the Baptist bookstore. And Jesus was white, you know, Jesus was white. And I honestly looked at white Jesus and didn't see white Jesus, I don't think. I think for me, you don't know what Jesus looks like. Maybe you did the best you could with this image, but Jesus loves me. And I think I always had an understanding that Jesus's culture,
yeah.
Everything about Jesus was different than my own lived present, you know, contemporary experience, which was fine and exciting for me. What mattered to me was that Jesus loved me and that Jesus was my friend, that Jesus died for me, that Jesus cared for me, that he, you know, so for me as a kid, I just loved Jesus. And I don't think I had any negative perception of Jesus as a portrayed in our lessons and things like that as a white man. And I think I may have to say that perhaps that was reinforced because I both went to private Christian school owned and led and taught by Black people.
Yeah.
I went to church just the same way. So I don't know if somehow those things were reinforced and that the image of Jesus just didn't have, for me, that I can think of, have a significant impact on how I felt about him and how I thought he felt about me.
Over the years, how has your understanding and relationship with Jesus changed and grown in and out of the Seventh-day Adventist circles? Because I know you've been in also Pentecostal circles, which is amazing and beautiful. And so talk a little bit about how that's all grown over the years.
I have come to appreciate what it means to wrestle with the culture of Jesus. I've come to appreciate what that, as I've gotten older and seeing other people really wrestle with their experiences as minorities in church settings. I didn't feel like a minority, and how, you know, this is like an aside. It's not really, really connected to that, but I'm going to come back to it. It's like, I didn't have that experience. So if you talk to other black people who maybe went to school with mostly white kids, there's always that point when in the history lesson, when the discussion of slavery comes up and the black kids are like, you know, oh my God, don't turn around and look at me.
Yeah.
I did not have that experience until I was in seventh grade. And so my experience with Jesus and how it has grown, I feel just as connected to him in whatever form he is as I did before.
Yeah.
Like I said, I have expanded my understanding of what it means to wrestle with the culture of Jesus and why it's necessary for us to imagine him as not white or understand him as not white. It has caused major breaches and gaps for people when it comes to connecting with God. And I think that that's important to recognize.
Hope you'll join us next week for part two of this interview. Thank you so much for listening. If you want more content, you can go to jwbuck.org or follow me on Instagram, handles jwbuck. If you have any questions about culture, cultural identity, or faith, feel free to send me a message. Hope you'll join us next week.